This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's podcast that looks at the work of Star Trek creators and both within and without the Star Trek universe. I am John, and Mike is away this week, so I am joined by a very special guest this week, Charlene Schmidt. Char, thank you for joining us on Stage 9.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It is very good to be here. It's been a little while.
It has been a while. It's been a while since we were talking about this shortly beforehand. It's been a while since we actually had the pleasure of sharing the mic, as it were. And and so it's a real pleasure to have you back here, because I will point out that the last time you and I did a show here, we were talking about Kate Mulgrew and Orange is the New Black, her work there. And you eventually, after much effort, finally got me to say the episode title Tit Punch, which it was like pulling teeth, and you eventually got me to that point. So I thank you. You for that, Char.
I tell you what, that was a great effort, but the payoff was worth it.
I think so. And we'll be discussing actually the work of Kirsten Beyer as it relates to Voyager, and look at how that is going, what that says about what we can expect about her participation in Star Trek Discovery. And with all that said, Char, let us discuss Kirsten Beyer.
And let's do that.
You know, I think that you are readily recognized across the internet and the podcasting community as a Voyager expert, I would say.
Oh, expert is such a word with such a great amount of responsibility.
Connoisseur?
I don't know.
Are we better with Voyager connoisseur?
Yes, heavily knowledgeable fan of Voyager. I am certainly a fan, and I am a very enthusiastic fan. I don't know if I'm an expert. Kirsten Beyer, on the other hand, is an expert, and her expertise lended her to becoming eventually the sole writer to this day of the Voyager relaunch novels.
And yeah,
so and that's going to be the bulk of our conversation today. And have you read a whole lot of them?
No, I haven't actually. Mike and I discussed at one point, and I read Voyager Full Circle. And
ooh, yeah.
Well, my entry point for it was, I will freely admit, I think I tuned in for the final episode of Voyager, but Voyager was, everybody talks about Enterprise having franchise fatigue. Mm-hmm. For me, Voyager was really the franchise fatigue point. As I've gone back and watched episodes here and there, I've realized that it was a lot better than I gave it credit for in the day, and that a lot of my perspective on it had to do with the fact that I was just like, ugh, okay, Star Trek, all right. You know, it was in the theaters, we just come off Deep Space Nine and Voyager, blah, blah, blah. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, totally, totally. I definitely relate to that. In the 90s, we didn't know how good we had it because we had two series running concurrent for the majority of that entire decade.
Right.
We were spoiled rotten, and we took it for granted.
Right. And we, I mean, as any fans do, when fans are spoiled, they do lash out in the wrong ways. And, that's definitely, but Full Circle was my first attempt to come back into the Voyager mindset or milieu or whatever you want to say about it. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it, because I think it was the first time that I was able to slow down and appreciate the characters for who they were. As opposed to sitting there and saying, oh, well, compared to this, or, you know, the inevitable series comparison sort of thing. And sure, I thought that, yeah, that Beyer did a really good job of handling a lot of plot lines and making them very clear and working them in such a way that I was invested in each one and cared about what was happening for each character. And that's the only one of her novels I've read up to this point. But so she's written a number since. And so she's solo on these books.
Yeah, right now she is the sole writer of all of the Voyager books. I think she's been doing this, I want to say Full Circle came out in 2009. And she's the only person who's been writing Voyager novels since. And there's more on the way. Now, I think Discovery has actually postponed a couple of the stories that she's had, maybe she's been working on in maybe the last year or two. We were supposed to have had another one by now, but it's not happened. So, okay, that's fine, though. I can forgive that. Yeah, if she's going to be a part of Discovery, that's understandable. I mean, she's writing a novel. She's writing a series. She's got a family. She's probably got a social life. I mean, you know, life.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, come on. She should put the fans first, right? I mean,
right. Why isn't she thinking of us?
Right,
we won our books. Yeah. So, okay, you read Full Circle, and that's cool because that was sort of my re-entry into the Voyager novelverse for myself as well. Before Kirsten Beyer, there was Christy Golden, who was writing a lot of the Voyager novels. I think she started writing them around 2003-ish, so a couple of years after Voyager ended. And so she wrote several, let's say, Voyager novels, and I've only read a couple of them. Everybody told me you need to read Full Circle, and I absolutely agree that that is a perfect entry point where if you do want to get into the Voyager novels, if you want to re-immerse yourself back in the Voyager universe like you have, Full Circle is the book. You don't necessarily need to know what's happened in the other novels. You can kind of figure things out, piece them together, and then Full Circle just tells a really amazing story. It's very intricate. There's several threads going on. And I think one of the things that you can really appreciate is what Kirsten Beyer does for the characterization of all of the Voyager characters. She makes everybody interesting, for starters.
Very true. And I think that where it really lit up for me was Chakotay, who I always thought,
yes,
in any of the Voyager that I've watched, I'm like, this, it always seemed like there needed to be more with, like, there was, I liked what the seed that was there, but I wanted to see him grow into a tree, to use a completely inappropriate metaphor. That's, you know, but
cue the flute music, and then you've got some sort of ancient legend, and then you've got Chakotay.
Yeah. Right. But that's, I always wanted to see more, you know, about him and see him come into his own. And I think that Full Circle did that. You know, like you said, that there are more novels, and you know, the next one's being affected by her work on Discovery. And like, for me, I think that Full Circle is a great way. Like, it made me very intrigued about the characters on Discovery, in the sense that if she can handle these characters that haven't been beloved by the entire Star Trek family, and turn them in, you know, like, I wasn't a Voyager fan, and made me want to care about them, I think, you know, it's a good indicator of what she's going to bring to bear on the characterizations of this new crew, of like her sensibilities that are going to inform the series.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And I know Matthew Rushing also on the network would agree with you too, because he loves the Voyager novels and doesn't necessarily love the show. What she did, just kind of to summarize, if you haven't read any of the Voyager novels and you want to, here is your enticement. She takes a lot of the characters that you might have not loved on the show that had a lot of potential and actually gives them lives, makes them believable, makes them interesting, and makes them do some pretty incredible things, because she also weaves in great stories in between the, I think, very strong character moments. And every character gets them. So that's amazing.
So this is what always fascinates me with sort of the tie-in books, with the franchise books that come out. Star Wars has them. Even Babylon 5 had a book series, didn't it?
I think it had a few. I've not read them.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, Star Wars, Star Trek, you name a franchise and it has tie-in novels, you know, that come into it. Video games have tie-in novels, you know.
Right. Yeah.
It serves a purpose. And I think that it's really fascinating to take an author like Beyer and try to figure out what the alchemy is, what makes it so that her books speak so much more than these other talented writers. I mean, these are talented writers. You mentioned Christy Golden. She's written one of my favorite Star Wars tie-in novels of all time.
Oh, really?
And Dark Disciple. And I adore that book. She basically took some unproduced scripts from the Clone Wars and turned it into a novel that I couldn't put down as a Star Wars fan. Like, I was hooked.
Oh, interesting.
So I know that she's a good author, but what is it about Beyer that elevates her in the Star Trek family? And I think the characterization is there. Is there something about her writing style, you think, that makes it more... Like, is there something about... You know, because everybody has a specific way that they approach sentence structure. Like, if you read... Granted, the exact authorship of books with William Shatner's name on it can sometimes come up as a matter of discussion or contention. But, you know, if you were to take a book with William Shatner as the author, that has a different feel than something by a Kirsten Beyer. So do you think that it's not just the story and the characters, but simply her style is what makes it flow better?
It's possible. I think, I don't know. This is a really tough question to answer concisely. What she does so masterfully is she breathes such life into these characters while also moving along a story. And it's just very good, solid storytelling just in general. You know, have the characters doing things rather than saying what they did. And that's sort of a thing, you know, show, don't tell. That's the first rule. And she just... Right. She does that so beautifully that you can get lost in the moment or the story, or you're just going to get hooked and want to know what happens next. And so, like, in terms of how she crafts, like, her sentence structure and whatnot, I don't pay as much attention to that. Mm-hmm. And she probably, I mean, she has to have it. She's a great author. But I get lost in the story once I open a book by Kirsten Beyer, and I don't know exactly what her recipe is for that. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's kind of where I am with it. You mentioned Christy Golden. I am glad that she, I guess, maybe is well-known within several genres, as is Kirsten Beyer, but I was not overly impressed with her books, with the Voyager novels. You know, she does interesting kind of like little, I would say almost short story-esque type of moments, like little chapters, little... moments, but in overall story, I feel like she struggles, or at least she did with Star Trek. Maybe it just wasn't her thing. I don't know. Kirsten Beyer, on the other hand, I think she knows, especially Voyager, she knows that show so well inside and out and ties in a lot of threads that were just kind of left hanging from the show into her novels. You know that she understands this show through and through. She's seen it a million times. It comes through in her writing.
Okay, so it's a deep understanding of the material as well as, I guess, her style. That would make sense because I think that sometimes there is a crutch that that can be used by franchise authors to know that the audience is familiar, and so to move things along, they don't feel as much. And you know, the Star Wars novels, there are plenty of examples of this having happened through time. You know, I mean, I could reach all the way back into the early 90s where one of my chief criticisms of the Star Wars books was these descriptions. You should be treating these descriptions as if I haven't seen the movie, not as if it's just my friend pitching an idea to me for a role-playing game. You know, like you gotta engage me. So maybe that's what it is that she approaches, and maybe that's the magic formula for all of the authors that have really shined in franchise books. Is that they treat it as, like, I think a truly successful franchise book should be one where I remove the character names and, you know, and tweak it so that it's about, you know, a different crew in the 27th century or the 22nd century, and it still works and I still care about these characters. And I think that really with Full Circle happens where I could make this a book not about Voyager, like, you know, a control F and then like replace certain things. And it's still a good book. It's still a book I want to read.
Sure. But then conversely, I would argue not only do you need that sort of an element, like a really just a really good, compelling story, but the fact that she knows these characters so well that she uses that strength to really endear you as the reader to the characters and to the story. So the characters emphasize the story, where maybe Chakotay does become irreplaceable for mm-hmm. his role in the story because it's how he would act. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I could see that. I mean, the thing is, while we're talking about that, I know that one character in Full Circle, Morale, is that how you pronounce it?
Morale Paris.
That, I mean, that's so fascinating because I'm guessing like zero real imprint from the series on that character. Like,
I mean, Belana became pregnant with Morale. Okay. In the seventh season. So she was born in the last episode in Endgame. So it's not like we really got to know her. But
right.
There were a couple of issues where you have the episode where B'Elanna is really reluctant to, I guess, pass on her Klingon DNA to her offspring and is sort of playing a hypothetical genetic engineer and saying, what would this baby be like without Klingon tendencies? Because she doesn't want her daughter to go through a lot of the same things that she did. And ultimately embraces, you know, the child as she is. But there's also the thread of Morale being potentially the savior of these Klingons out there, this kind of like rogue faction. And that's actually, in fact, a little bit of what Full Circle is all about. I don't want to give too much away, though, just because I want people to read the book. Oh,
so that thread actually comes from the series?
It starts in the series because we come across an old Klingon ship in the Delta Quadrant that's kind of just been lost out there seeking their savior. And interestingly
really?
Enough, yes, it was a story pitched by Larry Nemechek and his wife, Janet, who's a friend of the network. And they ultimately brought that story to fruition. I think the story is called Prophecy. It's the episode Prophecy.
See, the thing is, I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch that show now. Can I?
Dude, it's great.
Wait a minute. Okay. What type of ship were the Klingons on?
I might lose a point on my nerd cred. I don't know the exact type of Klingon cruiser, but it's an old style. It's not a bird of prey.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. That sounds like a D7 type of
that's
thing.
That's what it is. I'm sure that's what it is. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Because the thing is, whenever I hear about like long lost Klingons, like the first thing that I go back to, because this was such a crutch for Star Trek as a franchise. Like once Star Trek 3 came in, I was like, don't be a bird of prey. Don't be a bird of prey.
A bird of prey. It's motion picture-esque.
Okay. Yeah, that's the D7. Excellent. And I'm sure that it's some classification beyond that, but I think I'm close enough in the ballpark there.
Yeah,
so.
I think there might be a couple in that area, but yeah, you know what the type of ship I'm talking about.
I hear you. Excellent. No, I'm serious. I'm going to watch that now.
All right. So, yeah, dude, yeah. Let me know how you like it. I think it's great. I think it's a funny, it's a more lighthearted episode.
Okay. Well, and it was in the last season, that would be, I guess, was it like a breather episode to like lighten the mood because they knew they were coming to the end or?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, it's certainly got a mix of humor, but I think it's more of the intriguing aspect of, oh my gosh, what are Klingons doing out here? Because you wouldn't expect to see Klingons in the Delta Quadrant.
Right, right.
But that's makes it so much fun. And then a lot of shenanigans ensue, as Schindler would say. So it's a good time.
Okay, cool, cool. Okay, so if you were to sit there and you were to try to like get in the brain of Kirsten Beyer in the writer's room for Star Trek Discovery.
How I wish.
Like you're the angel or the devil, whichever you prefer, sitting on her shoulder, and you're whispering an idea to her. Uh-huh. What is it from her work on the Voyager books that you would want to see her bring into things?
I love the fact that she brings in a good sense of reality to the characters. Nobody is a Mary Sue. Nobody is perfect. There are things from Voyager that add a little bit of drama to the Voyager novelverse. Like some of the things that Janeway did in the Delta Quadrant, she has to answer for them, or at least deal with them. And so there's consequences for the things that happened in the 7 years that they were getting home that they now have to work through. And so I want Kirsten Beyer, when she is formulating who these characters are, to just make them real people, make them flawed human beings. Okay. Yes, we're in the future. Yes, we're in Star Trek. But I don't know, make them, give them some sort of imperfection while still being our heroes.
Okay. And I think she totally could do that. I agree with you. I mean, I think that a lot of indicators about Discovery point to that, where they took an approach that a lot of fans have wanted for some, I mean, you know, I haven't seen anything but beyond the preview trailer, but like everything that we're hearing seems to indicate that, you know, these writers have taken it seriously, that it's important to show that these are real human beings. So I think that your advice will, what was heard through a time slip, and you just uttered your advice and it traveled back to that writer's room and worked its way in.
Cool.
So yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, is like that I think is really the power of Full Circle, and really the power of her writing, is it's really weird, because I remember, you know, when Next Gen came on the air and, you know, and had its own struggles and everything like that. I mean, you know, everybody readily admits the first two seasons are rather bumpy on...
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
On Next Gen, because... There was still an expectation. I mean, you know, like Star Trek was on the big screen and there were big space battles. And so, oh, am I going to see spaceship battles and stuff like that? And I think Discovery is actually coming in equipped. And I think that Kirsten Beyer speaks to this, and, you know, and Kent Powers, who we've discussed on the show as well, somebody, you know, who's a playwright. I think that a really wise move and a really good indicator for the series and the treatment of the characters is the fact that you have people who create realistic, believable people. And I think that what's so fascinating is that Disco is coming in with people wanting character focus. There aren't people saying, I want big space battles, or I want fights, or I want these are, everybody is saying, I want character moments, and I want interesting arcs, and I want the focus to be on the people. And I think that's a really refreshing, nice thing. Like, it seems like the whole fan base is unified in what they want for once.
Maybe. And heaven forbid if that's not the truth. Oh my gosh, are we actually agreeing on something? Holy whoa. Mark it on the calendar, folks.
Yeah.
But sure. Now, Kirsten Beyer, with just the way that she's handled the Voyager characters, I have no doubt that she's bringing a lot of strength and detail, and certainly, I imagine, rich backstory into the characters for Discovery. So I have nothing but pure faith as well. The whole thing with Brian Fuller, I'm sure you guys have talked that to death. He's great, but there's also just as many other good people still making this show happen that I feel like it's in good hands. Yeah, I really do. I am optimistic, and I got to admit, though, I am trying to avoid as many spoilers as I can, so I'm not reading every single article. I'm not reading all of the drama. I want to go in with as few expectations as I possibly can, because I just want to sit back and watch the episode, absorb it, and enjoy it for what it is, as a completely, you know, blank slate. Let it fill it out for me.
Right. No, I'm
of the internet there. Age, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think that's why it's so good, you know, to have these sorts of moments where you look back at the whole mission statement of this show. You look back at the work of the person who's working on the show and say, what indicator is this? Because that gets me more excited than anything that's going to be on, you know, comicbookmovie.com or Geek Tyrant about, you know, whatever production still they're going to leak, or somebody, you know, snuck a picture when they flew out there or something like
sure,
that. You know?
Sure.
I would rather look at this stuff. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we are in for a treat from what we have seen. I do think they are crafting, a new kind of incarnation of Trek. A lot of people have gripes about the look and the feel of it, but I do think it's going to create really interesting, compelling storytelling, in part because of the time in which it takes place, where not everything has to be that perfect utopia yet in the 24th century, because we're going before that. So maybe human beings can still be conflicted and imperfect human beings.
Which is a throwback to the original series. Kirk had to kick somebody off the bridge for being a racist. You know,
right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean these characters are not going to have good, strong moral centers. And we're certainly going to have social commentary all the way through. But at the same time, you have to have the spark for dramatic content. Mm-hmm. And so from what little I have seen, it does seem like they're handling it right. And I feel like the right people are in the right place to make it happen so beautifully. And story structure wise, with Kirsten Beyer being a novelist, where we have these episodes that are going to make a kind of like a bigger arc of the whole season, of course she's a part of that. She's just got to be. She knows how to string these things together. I'm super excited.
That is an excellent point, because you pair her up with somebody like Kemp Powers, who his play One Night in Miami, right? He's got a good grip on dialogue and the dramatic conversations. And then you have Beyer, who has a great grasp on character and, like you said, a longer view of the story arc. And you pair that together. Just those two names. But now you've got so many different names in that writer's room at the same time.
Right. And Nick Meyer.
Right. And so many names, out there.
Yeah.
And,
some of which I can't even bring to mind right now. I forgot who came in for Brian Fuller. Yeah, it's a lot, though. But that's not, I think, to the detriment of the series. I think that's actually going to help, because together they are working out every fine little detail. And if the story is nearly as elaborate as those uniforms, we're in for a good treat.
Yeah, we absolutely are. So, and I agree with you. I'm as time goes forward, I really, and as we look at more and more people like Kirsten Beyer who are working on Discovery, I'm getting more and more excited for it. I think it's going to be something special. I really do. I have full faith that this is going to come together, and it's going to be, because it's so hard to say, it's going to be great, because then
because we don't
that
know
word has right. It's going to at the very least be intriguing. It's going to be the type of thing where even if I were not to like the first episode, I'm gonna be like, there's a lot going on, I'm going to watch anyway.
Well, drag me into this story and don't let go. Suck me in.
Yes.
Intriguing is a great word. I do want to be intrigued. I absolutely just want to have. I want to go in with so many questions left unanswered after that first episode that I just have to hang on and watch more.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. So, it has been fun talking about Kirsten Beyer today and what we can expect with her contributions to Star Trek Discovery based on what she's done with the Voyager novels. But this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
After the captain's documentary, I think we all wish that there had been a piano in Sisko's quarters. And at some point in every episode, someone walked in and he was just over in the corner rambling away.
Warp 5.
And there's a wipe from right to left in the screen, and you never see that on Star Trek. It completely pulls me out of the episode every time I see it.
Thanks a lot.
I've never noticed it.
Yeah, I didn't notice it.
Ever!
Now I'm going to see it. Okay.
You just ruined the entire episode for everyone listening.
I'm so sorry.
The 602 Club.
That's a really smart idea, because that's also something that, Caesar sees, is that we're not that different.
The Ready Room.
As with so many places, CBS, in marketing the show and getting it out to as many eyeballs as possible, they're obviously wanting fans and armchair fans and maybe would-be fans, genre fans who might give Star Trek but they're still trying to get out to the great unwashed and the mundanes. And this is actually stretching the season out beyond 15 actual weeks.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows, iPhone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or just grab the RSS link. Of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place is to join the large conversation in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Stage 9. That'll come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, you know, that's where you can find the network everywhere. Char, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Oh the Profanity. And if you want to talk the Voyager novels, Kirsten Beyer, in Star Trek in general, if you want to talk Voyager, I would be totally down with that. So hit me up. You can also find me on the Nerd Party Network, which you're also a part of, John. And I co-host Punch It with Tristan Riddell. And occasionally we still write Star Trek stories. So check that out.
Yeah, that's actually Punch It's a lot of fun. But I've been warned.
You.
I've been warned that I might be full of rage after listening to your take on season 3 of Better Call Saul.
You can blame Tristan for that.
Oh, I'll be filled with rage at Tristan?
Yes, because he started kind of the thread of where that episode went. And so I blame him. There's a lot of thoughts that I wanted to put into that episode toward the end.
Okay.
And didn't think about it. Off air, we can discuss it.
But okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
There's so much to Better Call Saul. That's one of those really detailed, rich universes on TV right now.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's just so many things. Oh my gosh.
For sure. And while you're Oh the Profanity on Twitter, I will send you a note from Kessel Junkie on Twitter, which is where I am. You look for Kessel Junkie anywhere. That's pretty much what I'm doing. And of course, you can find me, as Char said, on the Nerd Party Network, co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing, a name familiar to people here on Trek FM. You can find me co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler over on the Nerd Party Network, where it's sort of like this show, but for Star Wars creators. And you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, which is, sort of a free-form funny thing. All that said, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We had a great time. Char, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. We got to find a way to make this happen again in the future.
Oh,
we really do.
Pleasure was mine. I always have a good time coming on the show. I love talking with you. I love talking Star Trek. I love talking Voyager. I love talking Kirsten Beyer. And since Full Circle is the only novel that you have read, by the way, I highly, highly recommend skipping to The Eternal Tide. Reading that next, you will not be sorry. And I recommend that for all of the listeners out there.
You know what? I'm going to write that down. I'm going to do that. And
cool.
While I'm ordering the Eternal Tide so that I can read it, I am also going to promise you that Mike and I are going to figure out a topic for the next episode of Stage 9. Live long and prosper.